Greet each one of you in the name of Jesus, the one who showed his tender love to us as we sang about this morning. I want to thank each one of you that have been on the the laminated beam so far this morning. I've been very, very blessed by what has been shared through singing, devotional, Sunday school discussion. I have to confess, I was feeling very empty this past week and even this morning. I felt like just hearing the brothers share, just felt like the lights came on for me. And I thank the Lord for that. A little bit like Paul going on that road and the light shone in so brightly that it blinded him. It's not a conversion experience, but I feel like the Lord has been able to shine through. And I hope that the Lord can shine through with what I have to share here this morning as well. Looking at three words: sympathy, empathy, and compassion. That is the title for the sermon this morning. And we're talking about our feelings. It's a little bit of self-reflection perhaps, but also more of an encouragement to better look outward rather than inward. Sometimes we do need to focus inward, but if we do that too much, we soon stumble as we become self-focused. The message this morning is more about feelings of reaching out to others. All three of these words, sympathy, empathy, and compassion, imply that we are thinking of others. We're not only chasing our own selfish dreams. I'm not only sitting in my own mud puddle by myself, perhaps. All three of these feelings are good feelings to have. And as disciples of Jesus, we want to model our lives after Jesus, right? So we say, how does Jesus want us to feel? The first one we have here is sympathy. I think I'm going to write them up here. And the definition I have for that is feelings of pity and sorrow for someone else's misfortune. So we have sympathy. And I came across one writer, designer, I guess, that gave some illustrations that inspired me. So he showed a hole. And there's a man sitting down in this hole, and he's hopeless, helpless. He's stuck. I don't know what he was doing. He was walking along and he fell in that hole. Maybe he got there on purpose. Maybe there was something down there he wanted. More than likely not. But along comes somebody else. And they're standing up here. And they're looking down at him. And he's saying, "I'm so sorry. You are in the hole." Now, I was trying to come up with a Bible verse to illustrate the feeling of sympathy that we use today. And I didn't think I was going to find one. I didn't think sympathy was in the Bible, but I found it. 1 Peter 3:8. "Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous." Now, having compassion one of another comes from one word. And that word is sympathes, or sympathes, I believe it is. I'll just write it down here. It's spelled very similar. Something like that. That's where our word sympathy would originate from. But this Greek word has the idea of having a fellow feeling, to be sympathetic. A lot of translations actually translate it as something to the effect of with sympathy or to be sympathetic. So I found that very interesting. Then we have the word empathy, and that's the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. So here we have another situation.
where the fellow finds himself in the hole. And this time, we have somebody else that got down there in the hole with him. He not only stood at the top and said, "I'm so sorry that you're in the hole," but no, he got down in there with them. And he's feeling the feelings of the other person. Hebrews 13:3 says, "Remember them that are in bonds as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity as being yourselves also in the body." And from that verse, I get the impression that you're feeling the feelings of the one who is suffering. Empathy. Yesterday I had the chance to practice empathy. I called one of my neighbors to invite them to our song service tonight. And she opened up her heart to me on the phone. She's gone through some very, very difficult times. Her husband's ended up in a home through a long, drawn-out process. He has Parkinson's, and he's been regressing. And it's a very difficult situation for her on multiple levels. I was able to empathize with her. No, I've never been there, but I can imagine what it would be like to be in her shoes and my feelings, and I can express those feelings with her. But I'm hoping to do more than that if the Lord gives me opportunity. And the third word we have is compassion. And again, we have somebody in a hole. This person is the same in all three of these illustrations. And this fellow, he had sympathy. He took time to stop. He was feeling sorry that the other person was in the hole. He also had empathy. And then he had compassion, because his feelings of sympathy and empathy moved him to act, to do something, to help in some way. I want to take you to Luke 7. You can turn there with me. In this story, we have a widow, and if you have a widow, that means she lost her husband. So she had gone through the grieving process of losing her husband. And especially, it is today, and especially in those days, it was the financial support. But we know a husband, we hope a husband, is a lot more than financial support. You also have the emotional support and everything that goes with a good marriage. So Luke 7, starting in at verse 11. "And it came to pass the day after that he, Jesus, went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and much people. Now when he came nigh to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow." So we see here, our sympathies are aroused, or we arouse our empathy. As this woman had already lost her husband, she had gone through the grief of that and the suffering of that, and she had one son. It says he was a dead man, so I believe he was a grown son. Now I'm sure he was very much a support to her, as she was going through the difficulties of trying to survive as a single mother. And that society where that son probably was the man in the household, but he was the only son. And now this son too passed away, and this woman in tremendous grief. Verse 12 there, it says, "And much people of the city was with her." They were grieving with her. They had empathy, or at least they had sympathy. They were there with her. "And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said unto her, Weep not. And he came and touched the bier, and they that bare him stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say unto thee, arise." And he that was dead sat up and began to speak. And he, Jesus, delivered him to his mother. And there came a fear upon all, and they glorified God, saying, "That a great prophet is risen up among us, and that God hath visited his people." We do know that God was visiting his people. And as his heart was moved with compassion, and he did something more than just mourn with her as the rest were doing. He was moved to action. Four times in the Bible it says that Jesus was moved with compassion. Now, moved with compassion comes from one word. But it's a single word that conveyed a feeling of a person, that their feelings prompt them to action. They are moved to do something to help in some way. As we ponder these three words, I want you to picture with me for a bit that you're on lifeboat 4. The water is freezing. The air is freezing. A little bit ago, you were safe on the safest ship in the world. But the iceberg poked holes in 5 compartments instead of 4. And the ship started sinking, the one that could never sink. So there's 34 of you in this lifeboat. There's only a few from this side. Most of them all are from this side because they believe that women and children should go first. It's a gentleman's society of the day, which is admirable. There was 34 on this lifeboat, and you're lowered into the cold ocean. And you're told when you get to the water, you're supposed to go around the Titanic there to any open gangways, they call them, and pick up anybody else that was able to escape through them. But none of them are open. Like many other things at night, not a lot went according to plan. And so what do you do? Well, if you're in a lifeboat and there's a ship sinking, you get as far away from that big ship as you can. Because when a big ship sinks, there's a lot of turbulence as the air escapes that large ship. And all the debris and the turmoil, you don't want to be there. You want to get as far away as possible, and so you row far out away from the mother ship. And so the Titanic went down. But there's an interesting detail here. There's 34 of you in the lifeboat, but the boat's designed for 65, almost double. There's about 1,500 people that are going down on that boat, and some of them might even be your family. So when you watch the Titanic go down, you're faced with a decision. Obviously, you have sympathy for the ones who are going down on the boat. But do you have the other feelings? Do you stay far away where it's safe? Or do you go back in and try to pick up survivors? Perhaps there's somebody that escaped. And perhaps they're clinging on to debris, or they're swimming for their life in the cold water, and they're not going to last long. We understand hypothermia. You cannot stay long in freezing water. So you in lifeboat 4, you decide to head back in to the disaster zone, and you're able to pick up 6 or 7 men that are still alive. 2 of them pass away then because of hypothermia, but you're able to save a few more lives at the danger of your own self. Now I ask you, what made those occupants face danger? They were already in danger. They were already in a small boat out in the middle of an ocean when help seemed fleeting. And yet they went back into even more danger because they cared more for others than they did for themselves. I believe they had empathy. I have a couple quotes here. Empathy involves understanding and sharing another person's emotions, thoughts, and experiences as if you were experiencing them yourself. Remember that Bible verse about thinking of those who are in bonds as if you were in bonds. You're picturing yourself being in their shoes. Empathy requires you to imagine yourself in their shoes and feel their emotions as if they were your own. Empathy is about feeling with someone, while sympathy is about feeling for someone. But I believe they had more than empathy. They had compassion. They not only felt the pain, they did not get in the water with them and say, you know what, it is really cold in here. But rather, they had a lifeboat and they were able to be of assistance. They had compassion. They were able to help in some way. I want to look at some more verses of what God's word has to say about empathy and compassion. I'll just read through a few of them here. We have Romans 12, 15 and 16. Rejoice with them that do rejoice. Now, we talked about suffering and disaster, but empathy is more than just when things are bad. Empathy is also when somebody has joy in the heart. Rejoice with them that rejoice. Now, when somebody's rejoicing, it can be tempting to say, yeah, but you know how bad I have it? And our minds go to our own problems instead of rejoicing with them that are rejoicing. This is a command. Rejoice with them that do rejoice. If somebody's rejoicing, rejoice with them. Get out of your own box, out of your own mud puddle, and rejoice with them that do rejoice. And weep with them that weep. In this story, Jesus told the mother to weep not, because he knew the healing that was about to take place. But we also know the story of when Lazarus had passed away. And Jesus then knew as well that he was going to raise him to life. But as he saw the people mourning, he saw the grief that was there, his heart was moved, and we're told that Jesus wept. Jesus' heart was moved with compassion. Weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another. This is verse 16. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. And one thing with compassion is the first thing you need to have compassion is humility. And I find it interesting. He talks about rejoicing with them that rejoice and weeping with them that weep. And then he goes right into humility. See, proud people are wise in their own eyes, or in their own conceits, as these verses say. They don't care to condescend to our low estate. They don't want to get their hands dirty trying to help me with my problems. And they tend to be critical of you when you're rejoicing. Brothers and sisters, we need humility. Let's choose to feel others' joy. Let's choose to feel others' pain. Let's show that we care, even to our enemies. Colossians 3:12, put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. This idea of bowels of mercies has the idea of the compassion that just is within us, and it comes forth from us. It indwells in our spirit. Bowels of mercies. 1 John 3:16-18. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us. So it's talking about Jesus' compassion on us. He did something for us. He went back into the danger zone for you and for me. That's good enough. Jesus died for us. Is that where we leave it? The verse goes on. And we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? That's a good question. My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue. Now, if we stop there, we're like, whoa, we're not supposed to love in word. We're not supposed to speak loving words. No, that's not what he's saying. We need to look at the full context of the verse. Let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. See, some people say they care about you. Some people are sorry that you're down in the hole. And other people love in deed and in truth. They do something about it. It moves them further than sympathy. It moves them all the way to compassion. Proverbs 21:13, whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. This is a negative tense. Proverbs right here is telling us that if we stop our ears, if we choose not to listen to the cry of the poor, God also is not going to listen to our cry. James 1:27, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now, if you know that verse, you know I missed a part.
Now, that is there. It's very important to keep ourselves unspotted from the world. That is pure religion, undefiled. But there's something that comes before that, and I believe if it comes before, it's of even greater importance. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. So what does the idea of visiting, what does that picture in your mind? Is it standing at the top of the hill and saying, I'm sorry that you're fatherless. I'm sorry that you lost your husband. Whatever your predicament is, I feel bad for you. I pity you. Is that what visiting is? Now, the idea of visiting has a lot more to do than that. It has the idea of doing something about it, helping in any way that we can. Galatians 6, 1 to 3, verse 9. Why don't we turn there? We turn to Galatians 6. Starting in verse 1. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, and I believe this is talking about perhaps a sin. Doesn't say that specifically. If a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual. Now, you which are spiritual has the idea of those who are connected to the Holy Spirit, those who mind heavenly things. You which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. In those words, I get the idea of somebody with empathy. Somebody that's showing compassion, but they have empathy. I'm considering myself because I could be in the same shoes. I could have fell into the same fault. See, it's so easy to say that this man should have seen where he was going. He had no right to fall in that hole. What was he doing? Was he looking at his phone? And that's just ignorance. Anybody knows better than to fall in a hole like that. You should have seen it. See, that's worse than sympathy. That's not even on the chart here this morning. Empathy, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. I could be the one in that hole. Verse 2, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. As we consider the fact that I could be the one that's tempted, and as I see my brother carrying a burden, and my heart is moved with compassion, if there's some way that I could be of assistance. And the writer here is telling us that if we bear one another's burdens, we are actually fulfilling the law of Christ. Now, that's pretty profound. We're told that the second greatest commandment in the Bible, this is Jesus' words, is to love your neighbor as yourself. What does that mean? I believe loving my neighbor as myself is what we're talking about this morning. Empathy and compassion. Verse 3, for if a man thinketh himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. There again, we have the idea of meekness versus pride. In verse 1, we have meekness. In verse 3, we have pride. And when we think ourselves to be better than others, we are deceiving ourselves. Whenever we find ourselves tempted to think, I would not have fell in that hole, I'm better than him, we are deceiving ourselves because we are all here together. We are all bent lumber, as we heard in devotions. We all have knots. Drop down to verse 9, and let us not be weary in well-doing. For in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. We're given the priority list here. We especially do good unto all the ones here, the ones that sit beside us on the benches this morning.
But we're called to do even more than that, to do unto all men. Wonderful verses as we ponder the meaning of that. Well, how do we live out empathy and compassion in everyday life? I haven't been able to, and I don't expect to ever be able to, and I don't expect any of you to ever be able to raise the dead to life, or to open the eyes of the blind, or to heal the lepers. But there are things that we can do to make it easier for those who are going through those things. We need to look for ways to help. And I want to read you Job's testimony, what he had to say about himself. And I believe it is a true testimony. He said, "I delivered the poor that cried, and the fatherless, and him that had none to help him. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind, and feet was I to the lame. I was a father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not, I searched out." Now, if that was our testimony this morning, if we pass away and that's what's written on our gravestone, so to speak, that would be wonderful. You meet somebody that's poor and you become a father to them. You meet somebody that's blind and you become eyes to them. You meet somebody that's lame and you become as if it were legs for them. The idea and the cause which I knew not, I searched out. I was reading a book by Mike Berry, and he shared how people can be quick to encourage you to jump off the pier and swim. They're all on the shore, and you're out on the pier thinking of doing something great, I guess, or something normal. And they're encouraging you, "Yes, you can do it, you can do it." And so you jump off the pier, and they're back there celebrating for you. They're all excited for you. And in their celebration, they miss the fact that you don't know how to swim. And you're out there floundering in the waves, and the riptide forms, and the storm comes up, and you're crying for help. And the ones on the shore finally realize that you need help, but they don't know how to swim. They don't know how to help you. Sometimes we have to learn how to swim to help those who are drowning. And the cause which I knew not, I searched out. Perhaps we never will know how to swim. Perhaps we've never been there and never will be there where they are and what they're going through. But maybe we can run for a boat. Maybe we can grab a life buoy and throw it out to them. I have a couple ideas here. This is a very small list. I trust you can take this much further in your mind. Offer help for the needs that you might see. Somebody said, if you say, "Call me," when you need help, you will never get the call. And there's some truth in that, because we don't like to ask for help. But perhaps you can identify a need and offer to do something specific. Perhaps you know of a family who's struggling to cope with life. Maybe you could babysit their children so that the parents could go spend some time together and rekindle their marriage and their love for each other. Perhaps there's a family that's grieving. There's one widow that said, "Sharing memories may hurt, but it is very appreciated." And in her experience, when somebody would share a memory of her husband, to her it was, yes, it was painful to relive some of those memories, and yet she appreciated it so much. Share good memories of the deceased. Maybe you have an elderly couple in your neighborhood. Maybe you can mow and do odd jobs for them. What are some ways we can help? Maybe the missionary is coming home from the mission field for a few weeks. They've left everything behind. Maybe you can lend them your car. You know, the one that you don't need. Lend them your best car. Give them something that they can get around safely in the few weeks that they're at home visiting friends and family. Maybe it's a school teacher on a minimum wage that can barely afford car repairs. I'm blessed that we as a church and school do better than what we used to do. But I remember hearing my child come home from school and talk about the teacher whose steering wheel fell off on his way to school. And I'm like, why are we paying our teachers so badly that they cannot even keep their cars in sufficient shape to be able to drive to their job? And that has improved, and I'm blessed by that. But is there ways we can help those people who are struggling? I'm actually jumping ahead of myself here, looking for ways to help. Is a brother struggling spiritually? Perhaps we can join them in a period of prayer and fasting. Maybe we can get down there in the hole with them. It's not always necessary to go to the next step. They don't always need our ladder, but they often need our presence and our interest in what they're going through. Look for ways to give. We read 1 John 3:17, "Whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him?" This is a very serious question. If we are Christians, if we profess the love of God that was willing to lay down his life for us, and we refuse to lay down our lives for others, how can we claim the love of God? Look for ways to give, perhaps anonymously. A widow said that some people had animals that they wanted to sell, and they would take them to auction. When you take your animal to auction, you write down your name and your address, and they send you a check, right? So people would take their animals to auction, and they would write down her name and her address, and the check would come to her. She had no idea who sold that animal, but she was blessed. I thought it was a wonderful example of generous givers. Do you know of a missionary who's really struggling to make ends meet? Oftentimes, building a business and providing your family can be much harder. We are so blessed in this climate that we have around us. I say climate, I'm talking about the police force that keeps order, the police force that doesn't accept bribes, the police force that you can call when somebody steals from you, the men who fix the roads so you can travel to work. There's so much around us that blesses us, and the financial system and not too many taxes, and we're able to work and provide for our own and be able to give to others. But there are other countries where that is definitely more difficult. We also need to be slow to judge. I want to share a little story with you about a man who was going through an incredibly hard time. He had several friends that heard about his predicament. They decided to come visit him. When they came to visit him, this is years gone by, they realized that his situation was much worse than what they had even heard about. And they were stunned. They didn't even say a word. They sat there with him. They mourned with him and comforted him for 7 days and 7 nights. See, true friends don't need words. I like to think that those 7 days and 7 nights that those three friends sat with Job really helped Job get through this very, very difficult time. See, he had just lost his business, but that wasn't his biggest problem. He also lost all of his children. He was grieving terribly, and his wife came along, and she was also grieving terribly, so don't criticize her for what she said. But she said, "Why don't you just curse God and die? What's the point of living anymore?" And Job was asking the same question, "God, take my life. I have no purpose of living anymore." See, these friends cared enough about him to sit with him there in his misery And they had empathy through and through. And we can learn a lot from them. But when Job started bearing his heart, his friends traded empathy for judgment. They had not learned to listen to a suffering man bear his soul. And when Job started bearing his soul, bearing his feelings, in my own words, Eliphaz said, you were a good man and helped a lot of people, but you cannot escape from the law of sowing and reaping. You are reaping from some wickedness in your life. If I were you, I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause. You should be happy that God is chastening you. You need to listen to me for your own good. If you read through that, I believe that's what he was telling Job. Bildad came in as well. He said, you know that God is a just God. See, that's true. There's truth in what they were saying. Then he went on to say, if your children sinned against God, would he not cast them away for their sins? In essence, he's saying, your children died, and it seems like they must have had sin in their lives, and that's the cause for the reason that they were killed. And that's an awful thing to say to somebody who just lost family members. But that's what Bildad said. He went on to say, if you would seek God, if you were pure and upright, God would wake up for you. He would make you prosperous again. Well, that went on for many chapters. I don't know how long they were talking, but if you read the book of Job, it's just chapter after chapter of this back and forth, to the point where Job even said, I'm not inferior to you. I have wisdom as well. They were so much back into the sympathy. I don't know if they were even in the sympathy anymore. They were in the judgment category. And God told Job's three friends, he said, my wrath is kindled against thee. Now, those are some words that I never want to hear from God, my Father. My wrath is kindled against thee. And what did he tell Job's three friends to do? He told them to go back to Job and have Job pray for them so they could be forgiven for the harsh judgment that they gave to a man who was suffering in very difficult times. When I'm tempted to judge, I need to ask myself, is it a right or wrong issue? Job's friends sure thought it was. But so many times the decisions that we make are neither right nor wrong. We have different backgrounds, personalities. Our brain runs different ways. We have different abilities. And we do things differently. If you are reaching out to help somebody, if you're bringing a ladder to help somebody that's down in the hole, can you expect them to do things your way if you're the one providing help? Does being a helper give you the right to make them do things your way? Or does it give you the right to ridicule their choices? Because other people are going to do things different than I do. And sometimes I think when I'm the one helping, I'm the one up here, that I have the right to tell them how they need to. Now, there are ways that we provide help, and there are thinking patterns that need help and guidance. That is true. But we need to be slow to judge. Let's not ridicule. Let's get down there in the hole with them. Let's feel their feelings as if we were one of them. And let's bring a ladder if we can. In closing, I'm going to tell you another story. Years ago, there were highway robbers that would wait along the highway. And if somebody came along that was defenseless enough, they would attack them and rob everything they had. And this happened to one man. As he was walking along the highway there, the robbers came out and took everything. They even took his clothes, and they left him half dead, we're told. In my own words, the preacher saw him, came down the road and saw him, but he kept on going. Now, I had to wonder if the preacher had sympathy for this man who was left half dead. I don't know. Perhaps he had sympathy. Perhaps he said, hey, I feel really bad for you, but I got to get to church on time because I have to preach this morning. I don't know. We're not told. The trustee came along and he looked at the poor man. He came over and looked at him. I like to think he had sympathy. But lo and behold, he kept going as well. Finally, a third brother came along. He was low pedigree in the church. People didn't think much of him. He also saw the half-dead man. And the story says that this man had compassion on him. He went over to the man. He bandaged his wounds. He put him on his donkey and took him to the hospital. He even paid for the man's care. We call it the story of the Good Samaritan. We don't call it the story of the unsympathetic priest. Jesus told that story of compassion because he wanted to teach us a lesson. Jesus wanted to teach us a lesson that if Jesus laid down his life for me, that I should lay down my life for others. Let's come to the Lord in a kneeling prayer. Father in heaven, as you look down from your holy throne,